You're listening to the Divorce and Your Money Show, the number one podcast that discusses the complex business of divorce. I'm your host, Sean Lehman, MBA and certified divorce financial analyst. And in this episode, I'm actually going to be the one who's interviewed. And I had the opportunity to be interviewed by a great podcast that you should check out called Solo Parent Life. It's by Dr. Robin Rocket. And in this episode, Dr. Rocket, or Robin as she likes to be called, interviews me, about a subject that, surprise, surprise, has to do with post-divorce financial issues. So I'm going to leave this interview in its entirety. I want you to get a feel for her show and her episodes and for all of you out there who are going to soon become solo parents. She has lots of great advice, lots of great guests, and good advice of her own when it comes to parenting, what that life is like, things to avoid, things to do well, and lots of different considerations to think about when your divorce is over. And so, without further ado, here's the episode on solo parent life.
Hello, and welcome to Solo Parent Life. I'm your host, Dr. Robin Rocket. Well, it has been quite a week. My kids are with their dad, and I've had some time to myself. And you know, this, I find, first of all, I had a listener reach out to me and ask me in an email, you know, Robin, how do I cope with being away from my kids? She was in the early days of her divorce, and I remember that, you know, just having to go a weekend or a week without, you know, maybe being able to call them, but not see them, not be able to tuck them in at night, and frankly, having a lot of alone time. So I will say personally, it's been a process. And in those early days, it was very hard. And so for any of you out there that are, you know, having some alone time as a single parent because the kids are away, making sure you take care of yourself. You know, I try to balance it with, you know, some fun time with friends and family, some good alone time to sort of, you know, regroup and reconnect with myself, exercise, and, you know, catching up on some work. And I found that that was a pretty good formula. Depending on, sometimes I may need more fun family friend time, and sometimes I need a little more work time, but try not to do too much of either, because it's also really important to have that alone time. And to, frankly, if this is still new, grieving. At this point, you know, I'm more used to it and comfortable. And one thing I've learned over the years being a single mom and being away from my kids for periods of time is that, you know, our connection with our kids never goes away. It's very strong. And so you can go a weekend or a week. In my case, it's a couple of weeks this summer away from my kids. And I remind myself, you know, that connection doesn't get less over time of not seeing them. It's just, they're not with me, but they are with me in my heart and their heart. And with my daughter, we have this little saying, there's a book called The Invisible String. And we have a little invisible string connected between our bodies. And so when she's at her daddy's and she misses me or I miss her, we tug on that invisible string and we send lots and lots of love to each other. So just know that self-care, compassion for yourself, time to grieve, time to be with friends and family, to also take a break and forget are all kind of important if you have some time away from the kids. Okay, so there's that. Today, I have a really great guy. His name's Sean Lehman. He has a podcast, Divorce and Money, and you got to check this out. He's really, really nice guy. He's a certified divorce financial analyst, and he's going to talk today on the podcast about just, you know, things to think about once you've been through your divorce, a little bit about budget and a lot about who do you find and what kinds of financial analysts are there, how to find one, good interview questions, and a little bit about investments. I don't know about you, but you know, this was not something I have strong understanding of. And so he gives some really good practical advice on how to find a financial analyst and actually some really good cool stuff that's out there online that you can do if you're, you know, don't need or don't want to do financial analyst and just do more on your own. So I hope you enjoy the interview with Sean Lehman. Hi, Sean. Welcome to Solo Parent Life.
Hi, Robin. Thanks for having me.
It is great to have you here. I have been really excited since I found you and your podcast, Divorce and Money. I've been really excited to have you on the show to sort of pick your brain. But why don't we start off with you just telling us a little bit about yourself?
Sure. As you said, I host the Divorce and Your Money podcast, and it's a website as well, divorceandyourmoney.com. And I am a financial advisor who specializes in pre and during and post-divorce, all things divorce, helping people ultimately, hopefully, negotiating a good settlement for them and being able to move on successfully for the rest of their lives.
Wow. And that's such important work you're doing out there. I mean, it's such a hard time for people, and to also not only deal with the change in the family, but also deal with the financial changes. It's not easy. So I just commend you about, you know, being out there and available to people at a really difficult time for them.
No, I'm happy to do it. You know, I started as kind of the conventional financial advisor where you do stocks and bonds and portfolios and you pitch people to bring your money to your firm instead of another firm. And that wasn't that fulfilling. And having had a bunch of divorcing clients, I realized that there's a lot of complications that are involved both in the divorce process and also just getting back on your feet afterwards when you're now a single person. And trying to figure that out is a lot more fulfilling, a lot more hands-on. And there's a lot that unfortunately people don't know. So I'm happy to educate people whenever I can on just some of the things that they should be thinking about and helping them find the options that are best for them.
Well, let's start there. Let's say someone has, you know, been through a divorce and everything is settled and, you know, they're kind of like, okay, what do I do now? Sort of what would be the first thing you'd suggest to people to start thinking about?
Yeah, the first thing I actually suggest is to breathe, take a break. You don't have to, when it comes to financial decisions, as long as you have a decent sense of, you know, what you're spending and what your income is, you don't have to rush into making a bunch of new financial decisions if you can avoid it. You know, as a after divorce or a big life change, whatever it is, and you're on your own, you just take some time to get acquainted, get back with yourself, kind of figure out what you're doing, what's important to you, get up and running. And that's really the first place you start before making any rushed financial decisions, because that's a good way to make a big error without thinking about it.
God, that's a great point of just giving yourself time to breathe and relax and settle into this new life, so that if you are, you know, if you do need to make some financial decisions, you're not doing it from that emotional or fear or upset, scary place, right? You're doing it with really being thoughtful. Yeah, it's really good advice.
And just to add to that, just one little other bit is when you start thinking about finances, you know, if you're in, I'll give an example is like, if you're in your 70s, right? I don't know if many of your listeners are going to be in your 70s, but it's very conceivable that you could live till 90 years old or beyond, which means you're already thinking in a 20-year time horizon for money. Now, if you rewind to your 30s or 40s or 20s or whatever your age is, you could be thinking about a 50-year period for financial decisions. And so waiting a few months is fine. There's nothing wrong with that if you really keep the long term in mind as how all this will affect you.
Oh, yeah. I never really thought about it like that. And, you know, when you make a big change in your life, you are kind of thinking more of the immediate, you know, consequences and needs. And so, yeah, this is really helpful. Well, okay. So let's say I've taken some breathing room and I'm ready to sort of figure out how I want to move forward in my new life as a single parent and make some good choices for myself over the long haul.
Yeah. So the first thing you have to do is kind of figure out what your goals are. And I know you've had some people, some previous guests on the podcast discuss these, but the way I look at it is I have three major goals that I kind of simplify things down to. And those are getting out of debt, saving for retirement, and having money for an emergency. If you can do those three things, then, you know, and set up your life so that you can, even if you're not ready for those now, but start thinking about kind of those big three, you'll be in a position where the rest of the stuff kind of takes care of itself, and you'll be in a place where you have options.
Well, that makes a lot of sense. Yeah. You know, Melanie Johnson and Tanya Steinhofer, they did touch on those things, but I think that's a really good starting part. So debt, pay off your debt, start planning for your retirement, and set up a savings for emergencies. Yeah. Oh gosh. And do you have any suggestions on sort of like how much or how to kind of think about budgeting for those things? Or is it really just start somewhere and start small?
Yeah, definitely starting somewhere and starting small is, I'll give you just a little personal example, is I have a tiny account that I don't pay any attention to really. And I put, it depends on what's going on, but I put something like $150 in it every 2 weeks and have been for a long time. Not an amount that I'm going to miss or notice that much, but you know, it's a good chunk. And then every now and then I'll look at that account and there are many, many thousands of dollars in that account from just a small savings over time. And so that's kind of my emergency bucket that I have. And, you know, so even just a little bit, be it $50 or $100 or a few $100, all of a sudden, if you start thinking about that every month or every few weeks or whatever, after a year or 2 years or 5 years, there's actually a lot of money that you can save up just by making very small changes for whatever your goal is.
Oh, that's a great point too. And again, we're looking at the long term, right? Like you were saying earlier, you know, 30, 50 years down the road. And so if you start even just a small amount every month, yeah, over the years, it's going to be building up to something more. And then when the rainy day happens or the emergency happens, you've got something to dip into. Yeah, that's really great advice. Well, you know, Sean, one thing I would love to pick your brain about is sort of, let's say you've gone through a divorce and you have some money to do something with that you want to save, invest, or retirement fund. You know, guide us through how to, like, who can we talk to? What's the best way to sort of deal with that? You know, like a 401k rollover, or, you know, you sold the house and you get a chunk of money for it. I mean, there's some of it that does happen. And yet, you know, all of a sudden we're sort of go, okay, I have this money. I don't want to spend it. I want to do something for it with my future. Where do I even go to deal with this?
Yeah, that's an excellent question and a very common one. You know, you want to invest it, but of course, how? And who helps you with those investments? And the
exactly.
Unfortunate part to this answer is that, you know, if you were to go to a financial advisor or financial planner or wealth manager, they all go by similar confusing names. But there are actually differences between the different types of financial planners or financial advisors. And you kind of have to determine, you know, you have to interview and go through an interview process the same as you would if you were hiring an attorney or, you know, if you have a choice in doctors, you might, if you're fortunate enough to have that choice, you might want to interview different doctors. You'll do the same as you would with financial planners. And you will, you know, I have some questions that I like to ask or some considerations that you should definitely talk to and research. But, you know, you have to start with kind of that interview process. And it's not something I recommend you just use the person your friend uses or the person you looked up online. That's not necessarily a bad starting place. But as we started the conversation, you could be working with that person for 5 or 10 or 15 or 20 years into the future and their firm. You know, so you want to jump into that with a patient, thorough process. It's almost like, in many ways, it's almost like picking another partner for life.
But I'll even say, Sean, it's so intimidating. I mean, do I go to a firm, an agency, you know, like HR Block, TD America, or do I go down the road to someone, you know, who's got their own shop? I mean, And they do have different names. I find it very overwhelming and intimidating. I don't even know how to start the conversation. So do you think that there's a preference about whether it's how much money you have or what kind of money you have on whether you go to an agency or someone having their own place or what? I mean, I guess that's where I would want to start before I even get to the interview.
that's fair. That's a good question. There's a lot of really smart financial advisors and financial planners near you. And so I would just do an online search. And I would actually, if I were looking from scratch, is I would just type in, you know, financial planner and where are you?
Mm-hmm.
Right.
Oh, me?
You know,
I'm in Marin.
Sure.
Yeah.
In Marin. So I'd look up the financial planners in Marin. I would meet I'd try and set an appointment. You know, they'll all have different qualifications too in terms of how much money they require as a minimum.
Mm-hmm.
But before I even get to that, I'll give you a key question to kind of try and figure out about all of them. But I would start doing some feelers, check out their websites, and maybe set up some appointments with the local people. If they'll take you, I'd give them a sense of, you know, I've got $100,000 or I've got $1 million or somewhere in between or more than that. Mm-hmm. And just say, hey, could we set up an appointment? I saw you online. And they would tell you just from there if they might be a good fit or not. And it's not too much more complicated than that, at least for just getting started. I've done for clients all the time. If I'm working with them through a divorce and then it's time to move on and I don't know someone in their area, I'll just contact the firms that I know, some big, some small, and just say, hey, I got someone. Can we talk about if they'd be a good fit? And I'll just do that first interview and they ultimately have to make the final decision, but it's not too, you know, it's not that complicated, at least in terms of starting.
Okay. And it sounds like they're going to be looking at how much money you have and maybe even how you have it, but on whether they're going to be able to meet your needs or not. Okay. That makes sense.
Exactly. And the big question, here's the one question you want to know, which is kind of all you need to know about financial advisors, not necessarily the most diplomatic question, but you need to ask how they get paid. Because they're actually, the reason there's so much confusion, aside from the financial industry doesn't want you to know all the differences, but the part of the reason there's so much confusion is actually all these different financial advisors, financial planners, wealth managers, brokers, all of these terms actually mean slightly different things, but these slight differences can have a big impact on how they help you manage your money. And broadly speaking, there are two answers to that question of how you get paid. Mm-hmm. Some firms get paid on commissions, and then some firms and advisors get paid on a fixed fee. And a fixed fee can either be a percentage or like a fixed dollar amount, like $1,000 a year for a financial plan or something like that. Mm-hmm. And so you need to know, that should be one of your first questions or one of your interview questions, because you'll know what that person's incentives are when they recommend investments for you or potential strategies.
Oh, I see. So if they're on a commission and they're recommending, you know, different things for me to invest in and they're making a commission, that's a lot different than if I'm just paying them a flat rate of $1,000 a year to sort of give me. Which one are you looking for? I mean, is commission better than fixed fee, or does it matter again about, you know, what your money is and where it is?
It's not a clear case. I'll say I work with both. Uh-huh. For someone who doesn't necessarily have a lot of financial savvy, I'm more inclined to recommend someone who has a fixed fee, because when you work with someone who has commissions, they might be recommending an investment for you. There's actually an important word that's floating around, and I encourage you to write down, and all the listeners, it's the word fiduciary. And if you just type in fiduciary in Google and fiduciary rule, there's a lot of complicated language that you don't need to get into. But basically, you want a financial advisor who's legally obligated to do what's in your best interest. Mm-hmm. And if someone charges commissions, they are not legally a fiduciary. They have a different legal standard. I know it sounds weird that someone, a financial advisor, could do something that's not in your best interest, but one who charges commissions, just the industry rules, as complicated as they are different. And so you want a fiduciary, and almost all fiduciaries work on a fixed fee basis.
Okay. So unless you're really savvy about sort of what kind of investments you want and how and all of that, it sounds like the commission, because they have less of your best interest and more about the commission in mind, your financial analyst, then you're okay, because you're more on solid ground because you have a really strong financial understanding of what you want to do with your money. But if you're not so savvy, and I would put myself in that category around investments and stuff, sounds like the fixed income just kind of puts you in a safer place on as far as what they're going to do with your money and making decisions about it.
Yeah, in general. And you have to ask, you do have to just ask the question is, hey, are you a fiduciary? How do you get paid? Because that's the only way to really find out the answer to that question. But for some people, you know, the reason I don't want to, you know, bash the commission people is that for some people, it makes more sense. And if you know that you're not going to be making a lot of different investment changes in any given given year, which most people shouldn't be anyways, can actually be cheaper to work with. That's why for some clients, I tell them to work with a commission person. I'll just make sure they don't change your portfolio much, for the very reason that, you know, if you're not doing, you know, making changes to your investments and buying things and selling things, they're not generating commissions. and it can actually be cheaper for you in the long run. So it kind of depends on what you need. But fixed fee in general, I think is the best option for most people who don't totally know what's going on.
Okay. Well, that's a good place to start. Okay. So then now, let's say I've picked somebody, and you were saying they all have different names, which they do, like the broker, the financial analyst. There's a couple of other names. Does that it sounds like that doesn't matter so much. It's more about this key question about how they make their money in the fiduciary that's more important. And then that will sort of, and obviously if you feel comfortable with this person and, you know, that you feel really understood and respected by them, then the relationship is there too.
Yeah, totally. Like I use different terms for what I call myself, depending upon who I'm talking to. And I couldn't tell you, you know, the exact differences between each, you know, financial advisor, financial planner, financial analyst, wealth manager, broker, all of these words kind of, you know, they do have some subtle differences, but it's really hard to really tell.
Yeah. And it sounds like it's less important. I mean, I think you're going to
on
what kind of work they do and if you fit into their sort of clientele kind of thing. Okay. That's actually really helpful to appreciate. So I think for me, that was one of the intimidating things to figure out. It's like, who do I even approach and how do I, and would they want to work with me? And, you know, So this kind of clarifies a lot.
And actually, you bring up something that's pretty important. Is one thing you should understand about, regardless of the name of the term, is almost every financial advisor deals with money. And the way that they make money is by bringing in more assets. And so regardless of who you are, how little or how much you have, you try not to feel nervous or like you're doing them a disservice. Financial advisors are very good about asking people for money and will bend over backwards if you tell them that you have a potential pool of money. And so if they're not doing a good job trying to educate you and sell you and tell you what they're going to do for you and how they're going to do it, that's a pretty bad sign. But they should all be very open in terms of answering your questions and seeing if, you know, the two of you are a good fit for each other, because this is going to be a very intimate and potentially long-term relationship.
Yeah, thank you. That's actually really helpful. So once you build, like, let's say I pick somebody and I'm like, okay, that's the guy, right? What they can do for me, what is the next step? What are the things to kind of be thinking about as far as like how to manage money? There's different ways to do it, or are there better ways or worse ways? You know, there's 401k, there's different retirements, there, you know, you might have some money left over from a sale of a house. Do you have any suggestions on how to guide us through a little bit on that next move?
Yeah, there's, you know, that's a complicated question because it's going to depend upon the individual who has that money or that person's life circumstances. But one thing I would do is when you're going through the interview process of financial advisors is I'd suggest you interview at least three people and mm-hmm. all three of them for free. Otherwise, don't work with them. For free, we'll put together a financial plan for you and give you a very detailed analysis of what they think is best financially for you and what they would recommend. And that would be a good way to get a sense. If all three of them are recommending kind of the same thing or similar strategies or similar types of investments or what to do with this money versus that money and this account versus that account, that's a good way to really inform yourself. Or if they make different recommendations, that also gives you good food for thought in terms of, well, why does this person say I should do this? And why does this person say I should do that? So that's kind of a free education process that I encourage everyone to go through, because it really depends on your individual circumstances, what the right kind of financial choice is for you.
Oh, that's a great advice. I never thought about that. And so I didn't realize that when you interview them and you're trying to pick one, that for free, they should be able to give you sort of their idea of what they would do with your money before you even hire them.
Oh, and even to take it further, one of the things that I do all the time is, so if we just take a step back for a moment and think about why are you giving money to a financial advisor in the first place? And that is hopefully to generate, you know, investment returns or to make money with your money. Well, no advisor can promise you investment returns at all. You know, those are uncertain. You have to take risk, and it's a complicated process. If someone does promise you certain investment returns, you should run and run quickly. But you know, in terms of things that you can control, any given year, any given day, your investments are going to fluctuate. But the one thing that you can control is how much you pay your potential financial advisor, because the fee that they take is going to be guaranteed. How much money you make from them is not. And so one of the things I do with the interview process, not just compare proposals, which I love to do, but also is I compare the fees. If there's a person that I like that might be a little bit more expensive than another person, I would just say, hey, can you match this person's fees? Because that adds up quite a bit over time. You know, the little bit of fee, be it a few thousand bucks or a percentage or however they calculate it, definitely adds up over time. And so that's another area that you can kind of take this interview process further and just compare them and say, hey, if one person is charging you, I'll just give you an example, 1% of your assets under management, another person is charging you 0.75%. Well, I would say, hey, you should match it. And if you can't, why not? Because there's, you know, probably tens of thousands of advisors out there, and it's a competitive industry. And many are very competent and will do good for you. So why not pay less?
Oh, that's great advice, Sean. I never even thought about that too. This is so awesome. So helpful.
And I come from the bias that I worked in the industry, and part of the reason I set up my own firm several years ago is I knew all of these practices and how the industry was taking advantage of people. And I was like, look, I don't want this to happen to any of my clients. And so even if I don't manage their money at the end of the divorce process, like, I'm going to show them, I'll beat up financial advisors all day on all the things that they're doing wrong that are trying to rip people off. And that's definitely a big one. That's the two, the comparisons and the free education, and also just comparing fees are two big areas that anyone can do that's very valuable.
Well, and you know, just to say, your podcast, Divorce and Money, I mean, I think I told you this when I first reached out to you. I really wish I would have known about it when I was going through my divorce 5 years ago, because the amount of information that you give and detail and just helpful, and you're such a great, sweet guy. You make this whole thing less intimidating, right? Just like you get to the bare bones and make it clear to people and stuff. So it's a wonderful, wonderful resource that you provide. One last question about this, and that's, so how do you, like, once you, so you've got a portfolios, you've got fees, you've done your shopping, you've compared, contrasted, maybe even negotiated a good fee with the guy that you really wanted to take. Then now they start doing their stuff, right, with your money. How do you know they're doing well? Do you have any suggestions? Do you check in once a year, twice a year? Do you get reports from them to look at? I mean, how does that, you know, that future relationship work itself out?
Yeah, that's an excellent question. And there's several answers to that. There's a technical answer, which I'll toss out there. It's going to go over some people's heads. The technical answer is that you'd want to compare your investment's performance to the benchmark, meaning there's an average performance. So for, if you were to invest in stocks, and we haven't really defined what stocks are, but there's an index, it's called the S&P 500, which is a group of 500 of the largest American companies. And if you have a bunch of US stocks and the stock investments in your portfolio in a given year are doing worse than that, that's a bad sign. So that's kind of the technical answer. And if that happens year over year or multiple years in a row, you're probably in the wrong place and in the wrong investments. But hopefully you kind of can do that work ahead of time so that you don't end up in that position. It's tough, at least for that part, but you should at least be checking in, particularly in the beginning. Mm-hmm. You should be receiving some sort of report every month just to see what changes are going on in your account. Doesn't mean you're going to talk to your advisor, but at least if there are changes going on, you should get a report, a statement that has the value of the money in your account, what investments are in there. And if you have any questions about it, feel free to give the advisor a call, and they should be more than willing to explain things. And then every quarter, so every 3 months, so March, 31st, June 30th, September 30th, and December 31st, you should be getting a quarter quarterly report, which says, hey, I made 2% this quarter, or I lost 2% this quarter. And you should give that a really hard look and definitely spend 15 minutes reviewing it or an hour reviewing it. And at least every half year, every 6 months, I'm actually preparing for some of these meetings right now, you should be doing a comprehensive review, just making sure that everything's on target. You know, there's life changes, right? So if you were to buy a house or thinking about getting married or moving somewhere or whatever, or get a new job, those types of things, you should definitely be checking in and say, hey, this is happening. What should I be doing? And then, of course, annually as well. So you should be informed, even if you don't want to be. I force my clients to be informed, even though some of them have no interest in their finances. I say, look, you got to know what's going on in your life just so that you know, should something happen to me or should something happen to you? You and your family need to know what's going on so that there are no surprises down the line. And if a change needs to be made, then you can make that change. But and then the other thing I would say as well is, if you have a financially savvy friend, everyone has that friend who's like a little, who's not actually an investor full-time per se, but is really into investments, I would have them just look at what's going on. Because I know a lot of amateur, we'll call them, not in a negative way, but I know a lot of amateur investors who know just as much, if not more, than many financial advisors, sad to say. So if you have an enthusiast friend who's really into it, that's also a great just kind of double check. Could be someone at a church, could be a friend, could be a coworker, whatever it is. But there's always that person somewhere. Could even be a teenager for all that matters. Because I knew in my teens, I probably had a little, I was definitely more savvy than my parents on some of the investments and what they are and how they work. And so, you know, definitely just have someone else look at it. Just get a second opinion, even if you aren't able to digest everything yourself.
Oh, yeah, that's really great advice. And I love this sort of, you know, check out and look at your monthly report. Definitely look at your quarterly report and meet with your financial analyst every 6 months, especially if you've got a big change. Like you said, you want to sell or buy a house, or you've got a kid going to college. I mean, what would be some big life changes? A divorce, kids in college.
Kids in general.
Retiring.
Marital status. Kids are a big one, of course, because if you have, that should also be in your goals. You know, if you're thinking about college for the kids, that's an extraordinary expense that continues to rise. But changing jobs, moving, house purchases, new partners, moving in, moving out, whatever, you know, unfortunately, deaths, you know, all of those things should, to the extent that you can plan for them, illness is another one, to the extent that you can plan for these and eventualities in advance, the better off you will be.
And it also sounds like, too, that, because I guess I kind of thought financial analysts were more about just investments. But what I'm hearing is they can actually help you with life events or preparing for these more minor life events, like, you know, marital status or selling of a home. So in that first meeting, but in future meetings, like every 6 months or quarterly, you can sit down with them and say, you know, this is the change I want to make. You know, next year, I want to buy a house, for instance, right? This makes a lot of sense to me. They would have a bigger sense of your money and then be able to sit down and go, well, think about this. We could move this money and that. And I never really considered that before. So it's kind of like an ally looking at sort of your bigger picture, but with an eye on the ball of your, you know, long-term future to help kind of settle into what would be more realistic goals.
Yeah, that's actually a good point. One thing I should mention is when you're going through the interview process, or even if you're working with an advisor of some kind now, is pretty close to 100%, at least 95%, have some sort of financial planning software they use that will take your income, your assets, your investments, project, you know, different life changes for you. If you were to sell a house, or if you were to pay off a mortgage, or if you were to wanted to start planning for college or retirement or a new purchase, you know, it's not all just big stuff. Sometimes it's like, hey, I got a plan to buy a new car in a year. How do I get as close to that as possible? Or I'm just trying to pay off a single credit card or whatever your issue is. They have software that can crunch all the numbers pretty automatically for you. And that's definitely definitely a good way to get some pretty detailed information, because there's a lot of moving parts in anyone's day-to-day finances. And then the other thing that you said that's important is you would want someone who's more of a planner than an investor. So you're right. There are a lot of people who make day-to-day investment decisions. So they might say, you know what, I think Apple stock looks like a good deal, and I think Amazon stock is overpriced, so I'm going to sell it. Those probably aren't the people, probably, that you want to be working with. You want someone who thinks more in a planning perspective, and what they do is they'll say, all right, we've looked at your whole financial life, your financial picture, we've come up with your goals together, and now let's help you achieve these goals financially. And that might mean investing in a mutual fund or investing in, just to toss out another financial term that's important, an index fund, investing in this particular bond or investing in this basket of stocks that will help you get there over time, or this real estate investment, whatever. I don't want to overcomplicate the terminology for now, but this person will look holistically and think holistically, and they're not in the day-to-day, you know, trading of the stock market. They're more in the life management, and they help out, or they'll outsource those investments to, you know, the JP Morgans or the Morgan Stanleys or the whatever else, because there are a set of managers who just do that all day, every day. Mm-hmm. Like there are people, and I actually used to be one when I was working. I used to work at JP Morgan, and they're research analysts, which is what I did. And their sole job is to follow a single company or like 5 or 10 companies and know everything about those companies. You wouldn't give that money to that person as an individual, most of your audience. You'd want someone who can say, all right, well, there's 100 different managers that I work with, or 20 different managers who'd make these investments. I'm going to allocate, you know, 10% of your money to this investment strategy and 50% to this investment strategy. And that's more of a holistic planner than a day-to-day investor.
Okay. This makes a lot of sense too. I always thought, well, I have to deal with my budget and I have to figure all that out. But how cool is that, that not only your financial analyst could, you know, help you figure out what kind of investments you want to make and things, but also plan for your future. It just never, I always thought you had to have a lot of money to be able to get that kind of service. So this is very enlightening, I have to tell you.
No, not at all. You know, you don't have to have, you know, you can have just $10,000 or $5,000. And the other thing to check out these days, even if you don't work with them as your solution, is they have a terrible name. They're called robo advisors, but they're robotic, automatic advisors, financial planners. And I actually use one called Betterment, but there's Wealthfront and a bunch of other big ones that have billions of dollars. But what they are is they're computer algorithms. And the reason they're important for you or your listeners is you can start investing with, you know, just a few $100. And the other thing that they'll do is they can do a very basic version of a financial plan for you to at least get you thinking about some of these things and at least get you knowledgeable about some of the investments, even if you ultimately work with a human at the end of the day. They can at least provide some of the education process for you and things to think about.
Oh, so it's like an online, so you just go in, kind of a computer program, you go in and you plug in, you probably pay a fee and you plug in all your information, and then they spit out sort of some options for you.
Totally.
Maybe a financial plan. Oh, wow. That's
totally. And
cool.
And they're super cheap for the reason that they are all computer. And some of them even have the option where for a very discounted rate, you can work by phone with an advisor.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, the options these days for your listeners are better than they ever have been in history. And so you can, even if you don't have a lot of money in a bank account, you know, if it's just $1,000 you've been able to save up, or $5,000 or $10,000, you can get the same type of service or very similar service that used to be reserved for the people who used to have 5 million or 10 million with these platforms today.
That's amazing. And that's really great to hear. Because, yeah, you know, you don't, if you start out with, you know, even $100, like you said, 150 every 2 weeks, $300 a month, over time, you can end up with thousands of dollars like you have in your savings, your emergency savings fund. So that's really inspiring.
Yeah. As I said, I have one of these robo accounts. It's funny because even I I use the same stuff and I practice what I preach, but yeah, it's, I just do stuff automatically. And so, and that's the other thing I would recommend too, is the more that you can automate, meaning the more than that things happen automatically for you, like a little bit of savings, or, you know, if you work at an employer, the retirement contributions, taking out whatever, you know, from your paycheck each month, those kind of invisible transactions really do add up over time. It's kind of crazy.
Well, and it's great advice too, because it's you're already putting it into your budget just on a weekly basis, putting money away, and it's out of your mind, and it's not into your day-to-day budgets. You're never touching it. And then it's there when you need it, which I think is lovely. I love this idea though, these robo-advisors, not only am I saving, but that savings being invested. So it's still growing it as well, just in that kind of way. That's fantastic.
Exactly.
Well, Sean, we have talked about so much. I just want to say how much I appreciate you being on Solo Parent Life. I may have to invite you back, and maybe we could have another episode of just sort of like, you know, the different kinds of investments or any other thing. You just seemed like an incredible wealth of knowledge. And again, just your way of talking about all this makes it so user-friendly that I just really, really appreciate. So, yeah.
Well, thank you so much for having me on. I enjoy talking about this stuff and educating people, and I hope that all of your listeners get some information from it, at least a starting point of information. And and I wish that everyone would take, you know, an afternoon or a series of weeks and just digest a little bit at a time and really start informing themselves and taking control of this part of your life, even if you don't have any experience with it, because it's important and it's not going away, and 100% of people have to deal with it. And so, you know, the smarter you are about it, the better off you will be.
That is exactly right. Sean, how can people find you if they would, because I understand you also do coaching for people, that in your podcast. So yeah, tell us how we can connect with you.
Yeah, the best way is at divorceandyourmoney.com, and it's the Divorce and Your Money Show. It's a podcast is the other way to find me, but I have tons of resources, both audio in the form of the podcast. There's 130 some episodes as we record this, and many more coming soon. Actually, in the coming weeks, I will have a series that goes in depth. I think there's at least 6 episodes thus far. It's going to be a couple hours long in total of just talking in depth about some of these issues and what you should think about it. This is a little bit more from a divorce perspective, but it's all very basic financial information. And you can find me at divorceandyourmoney.com. And there's a lot of great stuff there that hopefully is helpful for people.
Awesome. Well, thanks again so much for being on Solo Parent Life.
Thank you, Robin.
Well, I hope you found that as informative as I did. Like I said, Sean is really well-informed, great guy, and his podcast, Divorce and Money, is just awesome. I think even if you've been divorced for a while, it's still worth checking out, because he's got some different episodes, and he's up to over 100 now, just on different financial topics that I think anybody in any kind of stage could really find helpful. And I'm going to have him on. I'm having the Single Parents Summit that's going to come out in September, and he's going to be one of my guests, and we are going to dive deeper at that virtual summit, just around more of investments and the language and, you know, difference between stocks and bonds and all, just to kind of get a little deeper into the financial world and how we can all make some good and better choices and be more well-informed. So check out, sign up for the summit. It's at singleparentssummit.com, and you can sign up to get access for that. And it's coming out September 10th. All right. Thank you so much for listening. Have a wonderful day, and I'll talk to you next week. Take care.
Now, before you go, I want to make sure you get some really important information. All you have to do is go to divorceandyourmoney.com. The first thing you do on the website is sign up for the email list. You'll see a little box that says get updates and tips, and I will send you exclusive articles and content that you won't find anywhere else. And it goes directly to you, and it's a great way to reach me and ask me your questions. Second, on the coaching page at divorceandyourmoney.com, you can learn about our personalized coaching services. And here's the reality. Many of you are making financial mistakes or not getting all that you deserve as part of the divorce process. Or maybe you're just having a hard time making sense of it all and making rational decisions during this emotional time. And look, your divorce attorney is good. It's great to have a divorce attorney, but divorce attorneys are not really financial experts. And so ask yourself a simple question. Did your attorney, if you have one, explain some of the details that we just talked about in this episode? The financial issues in divorce can be really complicated, and that's why there's over 100 episodes of information, hours and hours and hours of information just related to the complex financial things that you need to be thinking about as you get divorced. And one of the big questions you might have if you've been listening to the podcast or read the book, Divorce and Your Money, The No-Nonsense Guide, or have been reading the articles that I send just to the email listeners, you might be asking, well, how does this apply to me? How does this apply to my situation and my divorce and what's going on in my life? Well, the only way to really find out, and the only way I can help you in your specific situation is through the personalized coaching sessions. And I get to work with you across the United States, from California to New York and everywhere in between, in person, by phone, and by email, depending upon what you need. And all you have to do to start getting help is go to divorceandyourmoney.com/coaching. You'll see some videos there, and you just fill out a short form, answer a few questions, and we will set up a complimentary introductory call. Here's the deal, is once you sign that divorce settlement, there's no going back. So the sooner you get help, the better. Finally, subscribe to the podcast and make sure you automatically get updates with all the new episodes that are coming out. And leave a review. A 5-star review on iTunes really helps other people discover this show. I'm your host, Sean Lehman, MBA and certified divorce financial analyst. Thank you for listening.